everybody, and welcome back to Chop On. You know when we appear, so I'm not going to tell you again. We appear on here, our podcast platform, which you can find on Twitter and Instagram at Chop On Pod. We have our link tree attached in those pages in our bio, so you can find the right podcast platform for you to listen to our show. And once you find that platform, please like, rate, review, but most importantly, make sure you subscribe to your favorite podcast that blends together cricket and wrestling. My name is Rajiv, and I am here with the one, the only, Bharat Sir himself, Bharat Sundaresan. Hello, brother. How are you doing this week?
Now that you've referred to me as Bharat Sir, Rajiv, you have to stick to it.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, no. Bow down to the king, or, you know, bow down to the game. I am the game. Yes. When it comes to talking cricket and wrestling, clearly. At least some people seem to believe so. So, yeah, which means that this long-drawn heel turn has begun. It has commenced. Yeah, I mean, look, that's how it starts, right? They start calling me Bharat Sir on Talk Back with Gavin Bharat, and then you latch onto it, and suddenly it goes to my head eventually, because with me, it will take a long time for that to happen. And then like Bret Hart in the mid-90s, I'll be like, I know exactly what's going to happen. You are going to then, like, you know, be all Bharat Sir-ing me. And then at one point, the crowd will be cheering for you and not so much for me. Jealousy creeps in. Classic old school wrestling angle, Rajiv. And I turn on you. I'll smash you. Yeah.
Also be a case of you're the MS Dhoni to my Virat Kohli.
Oh, that'll be quite something. Yeah.
That would be something.
I used to have this theory about MS Dhoni and Virat Kohli. Like, you know, people always used to say, came up with this silly theory in 2014. Like how on the 2011-12 tour, one by one, Dhoni started getting rid of all the senior players. I mean, that's the rumor or the allegation against him, which is not true. Read the book, The Dhoni Touch. You'll find out it's not true. But he did have a role to play in easing some of them out from one-day cricket. So I would say that, because 2014 was when Dhoni suddenly retired and Virat Kohli took over, right? So I was like, yeah. So once MS Dhoni was finished, gunning everyone else down, he turned around and there was Virat Kohli with her revolver, right? Like, you know, in like those classic old Hindi movies. So that could happen as well. Yeah.
It could happen. Maybe one day Chop On will be Chop On with Rajiv, and that's it.
Whoa, wow. Okay. Now that... Okay, till now, I thought that was all kayfabe, but this sounds like a shoot. This suddenly turned into a shoot show, Rajiv. Are you sure?
Maybe this whole time we've been building you up for a heel turn and I'm the one that's turning heel. That could be another classic wrestling example.
I know, like Seth Rollins. You could be the Seth Rollins of this little two-man shield. Yeah.
Folks, if you have never listened to us before, we're going to take topics related to cricket and wrestling, kind of like what we just did here, and we are going to discuss them. We used to do it for 5 minutes maximum each, but Bharat Sir, I don't think I told you this. I'm going to just throw the timing thing out because you and I both, we go on and on and on, and we've thrown it out in the past already, so we're done with the timing. But we do know that we have listeners that love cricket and don't love wrestling, or they love wrestling and don't love cricket, but we want to enlighten them and let them love it. So we have a term or rule of the week and also a history lesson. But now it is time to rotate the strike, which is going to be wrestling heavy this week. And Bharat Sir, I know that you're just absolutely going to hate this since you talk cricket so much. Is that right? Are you going to hate how much wrestling we have this time?
I'm already excited. I saw the format when you sent it to me, Rajiv, and I was like, yes, this is the kind of chop on we need to do more often. But yeah, hey, before we start, we must apologize for missing last week. Rajiv had some health issues, stomach flu, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
And I was also a little busy. And anyway, Rajiv had some important private business to take care of as well. You know, it is... 2021 in my book is the year of Rajiv, or Rahib. So we will hear a lot about Rajiv's personal life as the year moves on, right, Rajiv?
That is correct. Probably, I'd say a few weeks from now, some things are gonna change. So we will enlighten our listeners at that time. I will present topics and we will go back and forth discussing these. And here is our first topic. CM Punk opened the second episode of AEW Rampage in Chicago, Illinois, by making his return to wrestling. Punk was visibly emotional as he came out and made his slow trek to the ring, taking everything in. He got into the ring and had plenty of time to let all of us fans know what his intentions are. Punk said he's got time Wednesdays, Fridays, 4 pay-per-views a year, and he's not going anywhere. He comments that if years ago he let anyone down, referencing when he walked out of WWE, he says he wasn't going to get healthy mentally or physically if he stayed in the place that got him sick in the first place. He then reveals his new t-shirt, says he wants to tell a story, and sits cross-legged in the middle of the ring, similar to how he sat giving his pipe bomb promo in 2011. Punk would reference leaving Ring of Honor in 2005. He said that's when he left pro wrestling, was in 2005, and he's now back in pro wrestling in 2021. He mentions wanting to wrestle the younger talent in the back and turns his attention to Darby Allin and Sting, who are up in the rafters. Punk mentions that Allin is tough, but nothing is more dangerous than wrestling CM Punk, except wrestling CM Punk in Chicago, setting up their match at All Out on September 5th. But it said, a lot to unpack here, as Conrad Thompson would say. What do you think of CM Punk's return to professional wrestling and the fact that Darby Allin gets his first match in over 7 years?
Well, I think whatever we can say, I don't think we can match up to the Guinness Book of World Records. I don't know whether you saw that jumping on to the happening. Which is what it is, which is how it's been referred to in many circles, and saying that perhaps this will go down in their book as the loudest ever wrestling pop of all time, or the loudest ever wrestling pop, and justifiably so. Thought it was quite a moment in time for wrestling, for television, I think. Just the raw emotion, not just from CM Punk, but everyone present there and everyone watching it on TV. I know I was quite blown away by that moment. And that's the beauty, right? We speak so much about anticipation and surprise in wrestling, but at times anticipation stumps surprise. And this is perfectly a great example. Everybody knew, I mean, by the time AEW Rampage, the second ever AEW Rampage came along, and I watched it on Fight even before you picked up your remote control and switched on the television. You knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. And I saw your tweet, which was on the money as always. They didn't waste any time. They just jumped straight into it. And you know, once the music hit, and that's actually such a great time to do that as well, right? Look, I've never been to a live event, but at least as a TV product, which we discussed a lot in detail before we pressed record. But you know, the show is introduced, and this is still a relatively new show. I mean, actually, not relatively; it is a new show, just the second edition of the show. And the show's music is followed right after. I mean, there's no break, right? Like you're still listening to the whole AEW Rampage show and the introduction. And bang, CM Punk's music, Cult of Personality hits, and it could be just one man. And I thought CM Punk did played his role superbly well, which kind of I've come to expect from him. He is a showman, and he's not a showman who really puts on a show. And that's, I think, the beauty of CM Punk. He's so genuine, and he's just himself in many ways. So just the fact that he walked out and knelt down and soaked in all the emotions, and then as Conrad tweeted as well, imagine getting that kind of a pop for just sitting down in the ring. I think his promo was very strong, which again you expect from CM Punk. The way that he completely completely did away with his WWE run, and which kind of makes sense. I mean, I don't think it was a direct pot shot at them. It just meant that they are more sports entertainment than pro wrestling. So he kind of avoided, so he wasn't in pro wrestling for all those years when he was with WWE, and also the time that he's been away from the ring since 2014. So, I mean, there have been some great returns to wrestling, in history, but CM Punk's return just, it's right up there. And also at a time when wrestling isn't as popular as maybe it has been or it was in the 15, 20 years leading into 2021. So I think it just, the whole point of having crowds at the venue, the point of having a competitor for the WWE, it just put everything into context. And the fact that he's going to be there for every show, he's made it very clear. And the fact that he's so hungry to wrestle with everyone out there. And I thought, mentioning Britt Baker at the very start and mentioning Darby Allin towards the end, setting up that feud. So he didn't go. We've seen so many times people like that come back. And even because he did in that promo talk about how he has to settle some scores. So he didn't immediately go after a Chris Jericho or a Sting or someone from, maybe Sting is from an era before his, but someone from a contemporary of his, but he went after someone very young or very new in some ways. And also he started his promo by mentioning a very homegrown star and someone who has a lot of heat going for them in Britt Baker. So all in all, a moment in time happening, and I'm just glad I could watch it live on the Fight TV app, cheap plug.
Yeah, what a debut. And the thing about it to me is he's such a big star that he did not get physical at all. And everybody is still talking about how amazing of a debut it is. And it's interesting to me that I actually took that WWE mention as a pot shot. And, he's saying that the place that got him sick in the first place, and he left pro wrestling in 2005 and he's back in 2021 to professional wrestling. I think by doing that, he's basically assuring everybody, as well as himself, as well as WWE, that he's never going back there. And it's always nice to see a passionate CM Punk. In WWE, I thought you could always tell when he enjoyed something and when he didn't, but he would always do his best to mask that and was quite successful at that. But hearing his press conference after the show, why he chose AEW, and a lot of it having to do with the Brody Lee situation, speaks a lot about the company itself and why, and the kind of person that CM Punk is. He has respect for a company that had such big respect for Brody Lee and his memory. And, they didn't talk about his contract length, but they mentioned it would be a long time and it would not be part-time. That is intriguing as well. That leaves the door open for long-term storytelling, which you and I both like. They're jumping into the Darby match without much of a story, but I'm interested to see how they build it over the next 2 weeks before All Out. He has the freedom to continue commentating for MMA, which he loves, and he can work on movies and other wrestling companies if he wants to. I think as long as CM Punk is having fun, he's going to stick around. I think he's at that age and point in his life where if he does not have fun, he's probably going to leave again, but on a much more civilized way than he did the last time. And I don't see Tony Khan as being the type of person to hold him hostage if he wants to leave. He doesn't give off those kind of Vince McMahon vibes, if you ask me. But yeah, I mean, how exciting to have CM Punk back and just to see him having fun. That in itself is fun for us fans.
Absolutely. Can't wait to see what lies ahead for CM Punk and AEW.
WWE SummerSlam took place this past Saturday on the WWE Network, Peacock, and Pay-Per-View. The results from this show are as follows. RK-Bro defeated AJ Styles and Omos to win the Raw Tag Team Championships. Alexa Bliss defeated Eva Marie. Damian Priest defeated Sheamus to become the U.S. champion. The Usos retained their SmackDown Tag Team Championships over the Mysterios. Becky Lynch shocked the world and returned to replace Sasha Banks and defeat Bianca Belair to win the SmackDown Women's Championship. Drew McIntyre defeated the modern-day Maharaja himself, Jinder Mahal. Charlotte defeated Nikki Almost a Superhero and Rhea Ripley to win the Raw Women's Championship once again. Edge defeated Seth Rollins. Bobby Lashley retained the WWE Championship by defeating Goldberg via referee stoppage. And Roman Reigns retained the Universal Championship over John Cena. And a returning Brock Lesnar faced off with Reigns before Reigns would just walk out of the ring as Brock smiled at him and Paul Heyman. What are your thoughts on the show in general, and what was one positive and one negative? So I'll go ahead and start, and I'm going to be completely honest. I was not a big fan of this show. I don't think WWE did a great job building the show up as a whole. There were a few matches that I was looking forward to because they had a buildup, but the show as a whole did not have such a great buildup, and those matches delivered, but the whole show did not. We've established that I'm not a fan of Riddle, so I don't think this story with Randy is good. They are making Randy act instead of being a wrestler, and his acting is not the greatest. I know they're going to eventually split. I hope it's sooner rather than later, because RK-Bro can just disappear and never come back. The matches that did deliver, though, the Raw Women's Championship match, outstanding work by everybody involved in that match. Was I happy to see Charlotte win again? Not really, but they told a great story through that match. Edge and Seth Rollins had the match of the night. I sent out a tweet that I find it interesting, but also not surprising that Edge and Christian have had the best matches in wrestling recently, with Christian and his Kenny Omega match, which we didn't get a chance to talk about, but that was a fantastic match on the first episode of Rampage, and I'm really looking forward to their match at All Out. I did like the very first 5 minutes of Bobby Lashley versus Goldberg, but then it just dragged and dragged and dragged. And then Roman Reigns versus John Cena, that was a fantastic match, including that great return for Brock Lesnar. The biggest positive for me from this show, of course, was the Edge and Seth Rollins match. They had a great build, probably the best build out of the whole card, and they delivered. The biggest negative was Sasha not being there and Bianca just losing in, what was it, like 15 seconds maybe? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm all for a Becky Lynch return, but they should have had a real match. They will probably use that old trope of, Bianca wasn't prepared for a match with Becky. She was prepared for Sasha, and that's why she lost. Whatever. But I think that's just old and tired, but whatever. Also, I heard that at least for people that have Dish Network, the pay-per-view went off the air at midnight Eastern Standard Time, right in the middle of Roman Reigns versus John Cena. That is absolutely terrible. I thought the show was too long anyways. I mean, I have a lot of critiques, but I'm going to make way for your analysis, brother. I'll let you go.
Honestly, I can't believe that you don't like the RK-Bro angle. I thought, I love it. I actually think it's becoming a little childish, though. I mean, I saw the Raw after a long time. I saw 2.5 hours of Raw. I had a lot of cooking to do, as you know, and I am slow when it comes to that, but in my own sweet time. But it's becoming a little, I think somewhere along the lines, the whole dopey Riddle, and I think Riddle's a great character, an outstanding wrestler. I think you can do a lot with him if you don't reduce him to being a sort of imbecile character. I think there's a big difference, having been one of those myself at one point in my life. I think there's a big difference between being dopey and happy with life and being someone in your mid-30s who behaves like you're 12. I think that's what it's becoming now with him gifting Randy Orton an electric scooter. And I don't know. That doesn't work for me. I thought the combination was great in terms of it could bring out a new side in Randy Orton. And one thing we know about Randy is that he can reinvent himself. Yes, like I totally agree with you. Acting's not his greatest skill, even though he has appeared in a few WWE produced movies, but I haven't seen any of them, nor have you, I'm pretty sure. But I still think there's that angle has some legs, or that tag team has some legs. But I would love to see Riddle benefit from this angle in some ways, where he breaks out of it and has a great singles run. Looks like they're going to invest a lot of time in him. I do love watching him wrestle. I saw him have a main event with AJ Styles, which was right up there in terms of Raw main events for a long time. But it wasn't a great show by any stretch of the imagination. But I do have fewer critiques than of the product than you do. We did have this argument off air where I blamed you for being too influenced by social media. And I do believe that I am neither pro AEW nor pro WWE. Whatever entertains me, I get entertained. I loved Rampage. And, you know, just a day later, I thought SummerSlam was a pretty decent show. I was entertained at the end of it, which is what counts for me. I'm not a mark for... I'm not forget about being a mark. Like with my cricket, I'm a mark for the sport or the industry. It doesn't matter which team's doing well. And like, if I see good cricket, I love it. If I see good wrestling or a good storyline, I think it works for me. Unlike you, Raju, but anyway, you know, you seem to be too much on the side of everyone else these days who believes that if you like one thing, you cannot like the other thing at all. You'll get your chance, Raju. I can see you getting a little edgy on my screen, but you know, I thought what really stood out for me, absolutely agree with you with Edge and Seth Rollins. Like the Brood intros, it brought back such memories. It brought back great memories. I almost expected Gangrel to come back. I actually was one of the few people who I thought Gangrel was a cool character. And I thought he used to wrestle. I just like his style of wrestling as well. It was so stiff and it was believable. But anyway, hopefully this means Gangrel comes back at some point, but maybe not. I think he still does wrestle somewhere, if I'm not mistaken.
He does somewhere. I don't know where exactly, but yeah. he was on an AEW pay-per-view for like 30 seconds earlier this year. Okay. So,
yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah. So, but I thought the Edge Seth Rollins match was great. I didn't quite get. I mean, now I think it's become a boring trope of, oh, you're taking me to the dark side. Too many people say that. I don't know after a point what it means. You know, especially in a one-on-one normal wrestling match. I mean, if this was an Extreme Rules match, or which you would expect that would be the next in line for them, where they'll have one of those, either a cage match or a false count anywhere match, one of those crazy matches where there'll be a lot of blood and a lot of weapons being used, but. I understand someone saying that in a match like that, but I didn't understand the build-up, but the match itself delivered. So did Roman Reigns and John Cena. I think it was one of John Cena's best performances in a long time. I love the storytelling within the match as well. You know, the whole thing of how Cena just needed to get him down 1-2-3 somehow, but Roman Reigns somehow kept avoiding that and avoided a lot of finishing moves from John Cena. And, you know, and it was a dominant end to that match. It wasn't one of those ends where he was just he had to drag his, you know, the classic old wrestling trope again of drag his limp body over John Cena and had to cover him. I thought he did a great job in finishing him off and looking very strong in the end. And of course, Brock Lesnar's comeback, and I love the Brock Lesnar look. It looks like he's stolen a bit of Bray Wyatt in terms of the I don't know what ponytail that's called, but yeah, and the beard. He looked a little like, I mean, if Brock Lesnar and Bray Wyatt had a child, I think they would look like Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam 2021. So that at least could build up. As we've seen a lot with anything to do with SmackDown, has a lot more potential. Paul Heyman, which side does he go? And just Paul Heyman being Paul Heyman, his reactions to Brock Lesnar coming out, I thought it was a great moment. And there were, like, yeah, I completely agree with you again about Becky Lynch. And you can't bury someone who you've built up so much, right? Bianca Belair has got so much going for her momentum. But to bring Becky Lynch back, and I mean, she could have come and helped Bianca in some ways. And like, you know, they could have done that that old angle of like, you know, okay, but I've helped you, now you need to put your title on the line. You know, one of those classic ones. So, I would have preferred that. I personally wasn't a big fan of Charlotte Flair winning another title. I thought the match was very good. Of course, you expect that when you have Adelaide's own Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair. And I love it. And I told you, I messaged this to you as well. Another sign that Conrad does not watch Raw much. Because that's how they announce Like that's how they announce her arrival every time, right? From Adelaide, South Australia. So for all you guys listening to us in America, especially our ad-free shows family, if you ever wanted to know where I come from, Carl Mandic, I don't know whether you listen to this. You've always struggled with figuring out which city I live in. Adelaide, South Australia, the same as Rhea Ripley. So I thought the match was good, but the thing with Charlotte Flair is also, I think she can do with a... She could do the reinvention of her character. I saw her on Raw after that. It's the same old, it sounded like the same promo she's done after winning every title, like about I'm the queen, there's nobody better than me. And it just doesn't make sense after a point. So maybe it would have made sense to make her somehow, I either give her a feud which doesn't involve a title, or somehow just... find a different way of telling that story. But now it seems like the old, same old, same old path that they're taking with her. Of course, the Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre feud was quite ridiculous to start with. And the only thing I was hoping for is for our good friends, Veer and Shanky, to turn on Jinder at some point. But I don't know what role they're playing either. I don't know. That's been arguably one of the stupidest angles I've seen in the last couple of years, the whole Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre sword bullshit. So, look,
yeah, I've never known a Maharaja to be afraid of a sword.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. That's a very good point. And so afraid that, I don't know. It didn't make any sense, that whole thing. Yeah. And I did a Goldberg and said bullshit on air. So, yay. And which brings me to the Goldberg match. You're right. I didn't expect it to go on that long. And after the first 5 minutes, I was like, wait, which way are they going with this? Could Goldberg actually... And if Goldberg had defeated Bobby Lashley after a 10-minute match, I would have said, well, all right, Bill, I give it to you. But yeah, I mean, then they had to take the lazy route of having him injured and then getting his son involved. Now, which I guess sets them up for, again, like I said, with Edge and Seth Rollins, a cage match with Goldberg celebrating at the end with his son, I guess. But does that mean he gets the title? Or I don't know, maybe the title stipulation is taken away and they say that it's not for the title. But I have no idea what's going to happen. Unless they, I know we're going to talk about this very soon, or this could be a segue to that. Maybe they're planning that for Saudi Arabia. Who knows?
Well, Extreme Rules is the next pay-per-view, which I think is in September, but you are right. WWE's next event in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia will reportedly be the Crown Jewel 2021 event. According to PW Insider, the event is reportedly set for Thursday, October 21st. They did have a little promo during SummerSlam, and all it said was October and did not give an exact date. But the decision on the date was apparently made a couple weeks ago as officials were debating on when would be the perfect opportunity to return to the Kingdom. This will be WWE's first appearance in the Kingdom since the Super Showdown event in February of 2020 at the Mohammed Abdu Arena in Riyadh. WWE and the Saudi General Sports Authority announced in 2018 that they were entering into a 10-year strategic multi-platform partnership, whatever that means, to support the Saudi Vision 2030 initiative, which is the kingdom's social and economic reform program. The deal calls for two events to be held per year, but the COVID-19 pandemic obviously forced that to change along with everything else in the world. So, but it said, what are your thoughts on WWE going back to Saudi Arabia so soon after starting back up again with fans? And do you think they're going to have issues with getting talent to go over there after that dreaded flight incident in 2019? And COVID is still raging around the world, too.
Well, all I can say to that, Rajiv, is $50 million for two shows. That's what the WWE makes. That's what they get for as part of their deal with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I don't know, can you call it a government, or we'll just call it the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I'm not the most politically astute, as you well know. So they missed out on that kind of money last year. So will they go? Looks like they are going. October 21st, like you said, is the next Crown Jewel event. it just, yeah, I mean, when there's so much money on the line, we've said this very often about the IPL, and we are going to speak about the IPL as well in depth soon enough and for the next couple of months, I guess. But when there's just so much money involved, business kind of takes over everything else, which is at times even morality, which is sad. But I guess you speak to any successful business person, they'll say, it, at the end of the day, it's what's best for business. You know, we've heard that a lot from the WWE in the ring with their in-ring product. And yeah, I think it'll come down to that. And ironically, you spoke about the flight incident from 2019. And the reason they were stranded on the flight, based on a lot of reports we heard, was because there was a money dispute. And Vince was not happy with not being paid on time or not getting what he thought he would. And as a riposte, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia did make sure that the flight did not leave for quite a while. And WWE had to pull off one SmackDown with whatever was left, if you remember. And I thought they did a very good job of that back in 2019. I remember Bruce speaking about that as well on Something to Wrestle With. And, you know, it's will it happen? I think it will happen. Like you said, COVID is raging around the world. But the thing with the UAE, where the IPL is going to take place, or the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, is there is enough money in there for them to ensure that if they want to make something happen, they will make it happen. And they will provide the kind of security in terms of not just actual security but health security better than anywhere else in the world, even in America, right? You don't say that very often about America. So I think they will be well protected, and I'm sure it'll be great paydays for whoever makes it. I read sometime back that the promos for that show already have some all the big names in it, from Roman Reigns to Bobby Lashley to all of them. But it'll be interesting to see how many of them actually make it. But the show will happen, I'm pretty sure. Will it be star-studded? Maybe. And I'm hearing they're going to have women wrestle there again. Last time, of course, we saw Natalya and Lacey Evans, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it was Sasha Banks.
It was Sasha Banks, I guess. Yeah, but Natalya was one of them, I remember. Were the first two women to ever wrestle in a public space in Saudi Arabia. Well, it gave us Mansoor, who we saw take on Jinder Mahal in on Raw a couple of days ago, yesterday. And he seems to be doing okay in his run. They are pushing him, not very... they're not pushing him a lot, but they are pushing him decently enough in that mid-card level with Mustafa Ali. So maybe they'll get another one, from the ranks, and we could have a India v. Saudi Arabia battle, I guess, in a WWE ring. I found it quite fascinating, the Maharaja versus someone who comes from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Well, it doesn't happen very often. There you go. It sounds like something that could have happened 70 years ago, but maybe 170 years ago, but we did see it happen in a WWE ring. I see. Look, I don't think Saudi Arabia won't happen. Will it be well received? Maybe not in America by all. But like I said, I go back to what I started with. 50 million for two shows, you won't say no to that.
Well, I don't think the event is going to happen because of everything around COVID. I see the government possibly restricting things again over here, and international travel is probably going to be one of those things. If the event does happen, I won't be surprised. Like you said, the UAE, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, they can make things happen because they have the money for it, and WWE has the obligation to go there because of that contract that's in place. So it needs to get done. Having a date sooner rather than later is a good idea to just get it out of the way. I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be as star-studded as it would be had there been no COVID-19 that was surrounding this whole thing as well. But I think the biggest issue with talent right now is a combination of many things. The morale is said to be very low because of all of the releases. There's a bunch of changes happening. NXT's changing. Raw and SmackDown are not doing the best. We don't really know how the talents are feeling about the COVID situation itself, because WWE doesn't want them to say anything. And I just hope that WWE takes into account the feelings of the performers in during this situation before they try to force them to go over, especially if the morale is as low as has been reported. That won't help anything.
No, it won't. It won't. But well, we've seen the WWE force the hand of the wrestlers one too many times. So, yeah, I guess, unfortunately for some of the wrestlers, for sure, I think they'll have no choice but to say yes. But I'm with you. It's better they get it out of the way now because their contract runs up to 2027. So there's still a few years left on it. And, yeah, I don't know what the repercussions are if they do not manage to pull off another show again. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, when you're talking about the pandemic, you can look at it in two ways, right? Considering in some ways the US and the UK have moved on and, like, you know, kind of sort of gone back to some sort of normalcy, unlike, say, other parts of the world, Australia for sure. I guess that excuse might not work for Vince. And just seeing the way the WWE do function, yeah, I see October 21st happening, unfortunately.
And now it's time for your favorite topic, Bharat. It's cricket time. Cricket Australia and the England and Wales Cricket Board have formally informed the Board of Control for Cricket in India that they have no objection to their players taking part in the IPL reboot. IPL COO Hemang Amin called each franchise on Friday to inform them about the decision of the two boards, and it is now up to the individual players' discretion on whether or not they want to participate or not. The BCCI official has also said that these players are available till the very end. With the ECB confirming that their players can participate in the IPL, it is now certain that some of their first choice players will not be going to Pakistan for their two T20 internationals. The ECB will follow the New Zealand cricket formula of sending a team without the IPL recruits to Pakistan. Obviously, Jofra Archer will not be taking part in the IPL with his injury, and Joss Butler will also not be taking part in the IPL reboot as he and his wife are expecting their second child. So what are your thoughts on the cricket boards allowing players to participate in the IPL, and how telling is it of the IPL influence that now they aren't expecting all of their top players to participate in international matches? And I think it's great that they're allowing them to participate in the IPL. This is kind of good practice too, since the pitches will be the ones that are used in the T20 World Cup as well. They could have their players report back to them on how's the pitch playing and tips on how a particular batsman is going to be batting and how to get them out or how a bowler is playing on a particular wicket. So I think this is very smart strategy by the cricket boards as well. As for the IPL influence, we all know it. IPL is a huge money generator and the players get paid very well for participating in it. So let's be honest, the IPL gets huge viewership every year. So, of course, you want to put yourself out there to show your skills, whether it's to the fans or even to remind your own cricket board of how great you are in case they forgot. So that part of it is not surprising, but it is a little bit sad to see that your players may want to participate in the IPL instead of defending your country in an international match.
What did I just say about the WWE? And I think we've discussed this so often and I think we both have said, or I have said in the past, that at the end of the day, the IPL just wins, unfortunately. There's just, unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you look at it. It does cop a lot of criticism for, you know, eventually having the final say on where the players go. But there's just so much money involved at the end of the day, Rajiv, and, like, you know, it is 2021. It is the era of political correctness, but one thing doesn't change, that money does, unfortunately, like, you know, run the show when it comes to just listen to the number of times they say unfortunately. I might come across as being very woke, as some people call it these days. Maybe I am, I don't know, but it was inevitable that it would happen. The unfortunate part of it is England have now cancelled a tour of Bangladesh, or postponed it, as they say, or at least left it in limbo for now. Australia was supposed to play a T20 triangular with Afghanistan and West Indies proposed series in Sri Lanka. That's not going to happen now. Australia as a team could well do with the practice series before the T20 World Cup in the UAE. But They have the perfect rationale to kind of back their players going to the IPL, like you correctly said, getting practice on those UAE pitches where the World Cup will be played. And it does generally involve some of the big names. The one good thing to come out of it is like a lot of players across the world who weren't part of the original IPL 2021 rosters are getting a chance. We've seen a few Sri Lankans come back. It's been one of the sad parts of the IPL in terms of Sri Lankan participation that, you know, Sri Lanka, because of the struggles of Sri Lankan cricket, we have not seen too many Sri Lankans really get noticed and get picked for the IPL. But now we have Hasaranga and Chamira come in, which is good news for Sri Lankan cricket and the IPL. Similarly, in Australia, you have Nathan Ellis get a gig, you know, just recently took a hat-trick on debut in Bangladesh for Australia. You know, so the boards have played it smart, the English and Australian cricket boards, by leaving into the players, but handing him their no-objection certificates and saying, like, it's up to you now. So in some ways, there is no if in it. You would expect all the big names to go. Steve Smith has already said he's going. Cummins, of course, has the birth of his child coming up, so he will not be going. But a lot of others will be going. If it's a Glenn Maxwell, for example, who opted out of the tours of West Indies and Bangladesh and now goes. So the criticism falls squarely on him and not the board. So I think they've done a smart thing by, you know, kind of raising their hand and saying, "Dekho yaar, hamara nahi hai." So it's on the players. That's the debut of Hindi in on Chop On. So maybe we should break into the occasional Hindi dialogue, Rajiv, on and off. So, you know, show our Indianness. I think it was always going to happen. And it's good news for the franchises. They don't have to break their heads as much as you would have thought they would have had to, in case some of these key English and Australian players weren't coming. But, you know, they also have some they will be missing out. But, you know, and like you said, the Sri Lankans going to RCB or Nathan Ellis to Punjab, maybe they'll make up for those losses. But what it does mean is maybe it won't be as star-studded as the first half of this IPL season, but it still won't be as bereft of stars as some thought it could be.
Aur ab ye terms and conditions hai Bharat ke saath. Oh, wait a minute. You got Hindi going and I just went into it. My goodness. And now it's time for terms and conditions with our resident expert, Bharat Sundaresan. I don't even know if that Hindi was good. It's been a while since I spoke some Hindi.
Actually, that sounded good, but you did sound like one of those commentators on TNA Rinka King. If you go back and watch Harbhajan Singh versus Jeff Jarrett. Yeah, I got that right, finally. You hear the commentator sound very much like you just did there with your Hindi. But no, Hindi was accurate, 10 on 10.
I thought I was watching some Ranji Trophy, but we'll talk about that off air. So our first topic is, Bharat, in cricket, what is a power play?
Well, does sound more like a wrestling term, power play, but it hasn't been around as much as you think or as long as you think it has, power play. I should have done some more digging and really found out when it came into being, but I would say safely around 15 years ago is when power plays came onto the scene in limited overs cricket. And what is a power play? So in 50 overs cricket, you have 50 overs that the batting team gets to face. And the power play is a period of those overs where, the fielding team can, there are fielding restrictions on the fielding team. How many players can you place on the boundary? So that's what a power play is. And it's been bastardized and there are many different versions of it. And we will come to the current format of the power play. But if you go back in time, so initially 50 over cricket started in 1971. And for nearly 20 years after that, it was the rules in terms of fielding restrictions, or there were no fielding restrictions, less like in test cricket. So you could have as many fielders as you wanted in catching positions on the boundary, protecting the boundary, if that makes sense, to be defensive. But then in the late 80s, early 90s, they brought in the 15-over rule. So which basically said that for the first 15 overs of those 50-over matches, you could have only two men on the boundary, or two fielders on the boundary, men or women. And you also had to necessarily have two players or two fielders in catching positions. What that means is catching positions could be, slips, which is like next to the wicket keeper. So in a position where you expect the man is there or the fielder is there to help you take a wicket. He's not just there to save runs. That's what a catching position means in cricket. So they generally will be closing. Technically, you can say, but the man on the boundary as well is also in a catching position. But yes, but I don't think it counted when they brought in that rule. So the 15-over rule existed for close to 15 years. But then the powers that be realized that one day 50-over cricket was becoming boring in that 15 to 40-over period, where teams were just would have five fielders on the boundary, which is the restriction. So you could have five. After the first 15 overs, you could have five men on the boundary, and there was no compulsion to have catching position, fielders in catching position. So what it meant was batting teams would, just focus on taking singles and five singles an over, and fielding teams would just sit back and not try to take a wicket. Like it was all about consolidation. And that started really making one-day cricket boring. And then once T20 cricket came along, and we've spoken about the history of T20 cricket in the past, none of our shows, go and listen to it in the archives. Love saying that. On Chop On, follow Rajiv and me on Twitter, and you know where to find Chop On. So once T20 cricket came along and people started looking at one-day cricket as the boring middle brother, if that makes any sense, the middle child, the powers that be felt that something needs to change, and they brought in power plays. So initially it was they said, okay, rather than have the first 15 overs, we'll break it into three power plays. So for the first 10 overs was the fixed power play where both teams, the rule was the same from the 15-over rule where you could have two men on the, or two fielders on the boundary and two in catching position. But then they introduced a batting power play and a bowling power play wherein the bowling team had to pick five overs, anywhere between over number 10 to over number 40. And then the batting team could pick their batting power play again, somewhere in between the 10th over and the 40th over, which was to bring some excitement and some more strategizing to one day cricket from both the batting side and the bowling side. Cricket is a batsman's game, so it was all about runs more than wickets. So they basically said that we need like different periods of the game where the batting team is just going for runs, and the bowling team is not just being very defensive. They have to attack as a result of that as well, because they can't have too many boundary fielders. So in a batting and a bowling power play, originally they would allow one man outside, one extra fielder, so you could have three on the fence for those five overs. And I know this is getting very granular and very complicated, but please stay with me. So that went on for a while, Rajiv. And are you rethinking your idea of picking power play for the day?
Or, no, not at all. This is interesting stuff.
So it is like a semi-history lesson as well, which is what we're going to do with our wrestling term and condition as well. I've done a lot of research on that. But yeah, so, and I'm looking forward to that more than this. But anyway, I'll finish my power play monologue. And then after a point, they decided that rather than have batting and bowling power plays, because a lot of teams would take their batting power play towards the end of that period, from over number 35 to 40. So it was becoming a little predictable. So then they just said, you know what, we will decide what the power plays are. And in the current format, which has been in place for the last few years, so you have the first power play, which is the first 10 overs. And then from over number 10 to 40, you can have, I think, four men outside or four fielders outside and no catching position. So gradually you build up towards that ultimate, like, because whatever the field setup in the last 10 overs, teams will be attacking and will play aggressive cricket because, you know, it's the last 10 overs. So you want to score quick runs and make as many runs as possible. So in that period, you can have five fielders because it doesn't matter. You have to give the bowlers a chance as well. That's the whole logic. And that's how it stands now. And in T20 cricket, it's pretty simple. The first six overs, again, you have fielding restrictions. And after that, you can spread your field. There is only one power play, which is of the first 6 overs in, of the first, of the 20 overs you get to face. So basically, it was brought in to make limited overs cricket more exciting, to make sure more sixes and fours get hit. That was the basic funda of it, and to impose fielding restrictions on fielding teams to take care of the middle overs. But now it's changed and changed and changed, and this is where it stands right now. Will it change again? I won't be surprised if it does. But and especially with teams like England just playing a very different form of 50-over cricket, where they play 50-over cricket like 20-over cricket, where they just go hell for leather from the beginning. Maybe the power play format is here to stay, unless you never know, right? Some bright mind someday, maybe some bright mind like Bharat Sir will think of some idea and things will change. But as of now, that's where power play is. And I can breathe again.
Well, it's good that you're going to take a breath, because now you need to tell us, in wrestling, what is a battle royal?
I found very fascinating, Rajiv. Like, you sent me down a rabbit hole which I didn't expect to go into, because I did a lot of history reading on the battle royal itself. And apparently the concept of a battle royal has existed for over 300 years. And it comes from the UK. It comes from the world of boxing. And apparently back in the day, in the 1700s, they used to have a battle royale where boxers, like amateur boxers, would get into the ring. So it was 20 boxers together, kind of trying to punch, knock each other out, following boxing rules. But because there were so many of them in a ring, often they would end up wrestling with each other as well. Like, you know, obviously, right? You're pushing each other, you're shoving each other, which doesn't kind of form, kind of stick to the original rules of boxing, but you had to, because it was like a scene from a crowded Mumbai train, which I know you haven't experienced, but hopefully you will someday. A local train in Mumbai is like a wrestling ring. That is a Royal Rumble. And you do get chucked out. And, I know I'm connecting things that a lot of our American listeners haven't experienced, but if you do go to Mumbai, especially, you should get into a local train. And even if you've never been in a battle royal before in life, that's the best chance to experience it. So the way it works is you get into the ring and you are like, it's like a human sandwich, where you've thrown in all the leftovers. Like, everybody's sticking to each other. And if you want to, if your stop is, say, you're 3 stops away from getting out, so you need to position yourself in a way where you get pushed out. There's no, you don't decide when you get out, which is pretty much a lot like a Royal Rumble. The only difference here is, in this case, you want to get out of the train, unlike in a battle royal where you get thrown over the ring, you have lost. So that's a little segue into local trains in Mumbai and that connection. But coming back to the history of the battle royal itself, so it has always existed. And then later on, when slave trade back then was also a major deal, it then also became a sort of activity for the African slaves during the whole unfortunate slave trade moment, for them to get pushed into doing a battle royal where they would fight each other, and the survivor in the end was the winner, which is the whole basis behind the battle royal. A lot of people in the ring trying to be the ultimate winner. It hasn't always been about throwing someone over the top rope. That is the pro wrestling version of it. So going back to the history of it, so 300 years ago, it started by the first inventors of boxing. I'll tell you the name as well, Rajiv. I have been doing a lot of, hopefully I haven't, oh man, I made the biggest blunder of shutting it down, but I think Thomas Figg is the guy who invented boxing, the sport of boxing, and so it was his idea as well. So he was the Pat Patterson of that era in boxing from 300 years ago. He was the original Pat Patterson, and I'll tell you why I'm talking about Pat Patterson a bit later. But so that's how battle royals came into being, and then they were exported to America, the concept. And they started doing it in America as well. Once America, the United States of America became, went from being a colony to a country, the greatest country in the whole world, born in the USA. So that's how the concept got transported there. And before long, like pro wrestling was just sneaking around the corner, waiting to catch on to any pop culture concept that was out there, which still happens to this day. I saw Logan Paul yesterday in the ring, and it was quite a funny segment where he was booed. You know, people don't like him for good reason, for everything he's done. And he was portrayed as a babyface for some bizarre reason by the writers of Raw, and it completely backfired. But that's a debate we'll leave for another day. So they latched on to the Battle Royal concept, and Battle Royals have existed in pro wrestling long before the Royal Rumble came into being. So they were around in the 1930s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and, you know, right up to 1988 when Pat Patterson came up with this great idea of having a Royal Rumble. And Battle Royal, like I said, it was all about a lot of wrestlers in the ring, jam-packed. And in pro wrestling, it was about who gets thrown over the rope. And, you know, if you get thrown over the rope, you're eliminated. And the last man, last woman standing, last woman standing happened only 3 years ago. But back then, the last man standing was the winner. So then Pat Patterson, the genius that he was, came up with the concept of the Royal Rumble, where he said, rather than have 20 to 30 men already in the ring from the beginning, which is kind of inorganic, because why are they not fighting if they're all in the ring? Why are they waiting for something to go off? You can argue a lot of things about wrestling logic in many ways. But yeah, that was his argument. He said, rather than that, why not have them walk in individually? You know, and thereby building up that anticipation about you don't know who's coming out next. And also you can focus more on the action in the ring, where at least for the first half an hour, it's, you know, there aren't like, it's not a melee of 20, 30 wrestlers. It's more about a maximum of, you'd see what, 8 or 9. At times it used to build up, these days it doesn't. And that's how the Royal Rumble was born in 1988. And then Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who at that point was a big deal with his 4x4, you know, and his whole chants, you know, again, born in the USA, greatest American hero of that era in wrestling, ended up being the first Royal Rumble winner. And from that point on, like WWE and wrestling and, you know, Pepsi and Cola, the Royal Rumble became the ultimate battle royal. People, the only one that people really, when you think battle royal, you think Royal Rumble. But WWE themselves have had so many battle royals over the years. It used to be a feature of the early WrestleManias, right from Andre the Giant in, I think, 1987 to, you know, Bret Hart winning it a few years later. So they used to have one at WrestleMania which wasn't the Royal Rumble, which is just called a Battle Royal. But then I think within the first 3 or 4 Royal Rumbles, it became an entity in itself. It became an attraction. And then, yes, in my book, it's still the second most important WWE pay-per-view after WrestleMania. Some say it's SummerSlam, but for me, Royal Rumble is the number two. And well, WCW had their own, they used to call it what, the like World War III or something like that?
Yeah, the three rings. Kind
of, where they, instead of one ring, they introduced three rings and made it even more confusing, where there would be 60 wrestlers. And I've watched a couple of them. I remember one where Scott Hall won, where he really did not have to do much. He wasn't even part of the contest for a long time, but he eventually won. This is when at the peak of the NWO years. So Battle Royals have always existed and they still exist in many different forms. But the Royal Rumble is the one that everybody speaks about. It all started 300 years ago in boxing and still takes place in the local trains of Mumbai.
I didn't know that boxing element, so that was good stuff. And I think that could be our over the rope segment too. What do you think?
I think so. I think we've delivered with two history lessons. Don't forget the power play.
I know
we were supposed to talk about something else, but I don't think I can better my performance after delivering two back to back over the ropes with both the power play and the battle royal, which kind of go hand in hand.
Maybe we'll have you talk about that over the ropes thing next week. So keep your notes for that. Moving on to our next segment, fact or fiction. I will present a topic and then Buttit Sud and I will each say whether we think it is fact or fiction and make arguments as to why that is. Here is our first topic. India versus Pakistan on October 24th in the T20 World Cup will be bigger than the final. Bharat, is that fact or fiction?
It's fiction in terms of the magnitude of the match. It is fact in terms of how many people will watch it. It's just because it's India-Pakistan. And, you know, I've covered a lot of India-Pakistan matches at ICC events. And I can tell you that they're fun to cover once the cricket begins. But the days leading up to them are not fun for a journalist because you struggle to match up to the hype that people expect from that match, you know, especially from the build-up. And it was a major deal, I guess, in the 90s and maybe even in the early 2000s. But because their matches have not been very competitive, you know, for the longest time, Pakistan never beat India in an ICC tournament, which is basically a multinational tournament. Didn't help, but they did get over the line. And I did cover that match at the Oval in London in 2017 when Pakistan beat India in the Champions Trophy final. But again, it was more or less a one-sided match. And I think that's really taken away from that rivalry. Yes, I mean, you know, there's all these political connotations or political connections made with an India-Pakistan contest. But I still think it exists to an extent when it comes to some fans, but I think it's lost its sting over time. And it has a lot to do with the fact that two teams haven't always competed in very close matches. They did in the 2007 World T20, even the first ever T20 World Cup, as the World T20 as it was called, where the league match was tied, and they of course played the famous final where Misbah-ul Haq called out in the last over and India won. And then T20 cricket was never the same again, which is again a discussion which is in our archive. So do go and listen to that. So I don't think so. I think it's fiction when it comes to saying that it's the biggest match. If it's in India, Australia and India, England are rivalries that have taken over. And when it comes to T20 cricket, I think India West Indies final would be much bigger than India Pakistan final.
Well, I'm going to say it's a fact. And the reason I say it's a fact is because India versus Pakistan is always a big deal. And now that they don't play each other very often, anytime that they do is a happening. Now, if they were playing each other all the time, and like you said, it's one-sided and they're playing all the time, then yeah, obviously it's going to lose its luster and not everybody's going to be looking forward to it because they know, oh, well, one of them is going to win by a lot. But to me, this is like a great wrestling storyline where, you know, there's an underlying tension between the two sides, but they never touch. And then finally, they get to the big stage and there's nothing they can do but face each other. So I think this is going to be a huge deal. Obviously, it would be a bigger deal if it were like, say, the semifinal or the final, but they're definitely going to get very high viewership because this is the first time they faced each other in a while. And I think the last time they played, it was ODI cricket. And I really honestly can't remember the last time they played T20 cricket against each other. So I think it's going to get a lot of viewers.
Yeah. And before we move on, just as a semi-history lesson for everyone listening. So India and Pakistan don't face each other in bilateral cricket because the Indian government has still not allowed India to play against Pakistan because of a lot of political conflicts. And, you know, there have been attacks on the border on both sides in the last 10 years or so. I mean, there have been many wars that have been fought, but especially in the last 10 years, there was a time in the early 2000s, India went to Pakistan twice in 2004 and 2006, and Pakistan came to India or went to India in 2005 and 2007. So four packed years of India-Pakistan cricket where they played test cricket as well. But that's the last time the two teams played test cricket, 2007. So that's like 15 years ago almost. And they stopped playing bilateral cricket after 2012. I remember covering that series in India, which is one day or in T20s. After that, which itself was a big deal because after the 2008 terror attacks in Mumbai, which later on, according to a lot of reports and investigations, we found out that Pakistan had played a role, or those guys had come from Pakistan, Kasab and co. It really did impact India-Pakistan relations. That happened in 2008. So right after those 4 years of packed India-Pakistan cricket series. So they don't play bilaterals, but they do agree to face each other in ICC tournaments, which like in a World Cup, for example, they kind of leave those political things aside. Otherwise, it will get too complicated. Like, you know, if India and Pakistan refuse to face each other, And what if they're in a knockout game? So who goes through? So to avoid all that, they do play face each other in ICC competitions, which is what Rajiv was talking about there being that whole anticipation of them two wrestlers not touching each other, but then getting into the ring. But also Rajiv has thrown an underhand punch at journalists like me, saying that it's not about the match not having excitement; it's about how you build it up. So basically, you're saying it's on us, not the teams. And fair point to you, but I can see who's making the heel turn very, very clearly now.
I don't know what you're talking about. The 100 is neither a success nor is it a failure. Is that fact or fiction? And I say that's fact. I mean, there are some things about the 100 that I do like. I like that the women and the men matches happen the same day and they're given equal importance. That was good on the ECB to make that happen. I loved the cutoff time rule that they put in place. You need to be done by this time or we're cutting you off. I think that's fantastic and should be implemented into international cricket. And if not international cricket, at least bring it into other tournaments, because sometimes these matches just go on and on and on, and it's really hard to watch sometimes. Where it was not so great is that, to me, and to what seems like a lot of other people, it never really felt like a big deal. And it's not as if this is like in Bharat's over the rope segments a little while ago, ODI cricket to T20 cricket. That was very different. I mean, this is just 100 balls. It's only 20 less than a T20. And to be honest, it didn't feel any different than a T20 other than the few rule changes. It never felt like must-see TV. And that, I think, is no fault to them. It's just that it didn't feel different than any other cricket that you were watching on TV. So I don't know if maybe they need to tweak the rules a bit to make it feel even more different. I know I said once it felt like the XFL of cricket, and I still feel that way, but I didn't see it as a success, but I certainly didn't see it as a failure.
Yeah, I think it's fact as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right with this one. If you ask the ECB, I think they'll say that it is like the ultimate success story of all time. But I think Michael Atherton, former England captain, turned outstanding commentator and outstanding journalist, has written a beautiful piece today. And the intro itself, I think, sums up what we're discussing now. He speaks about how he's compared. So because while the 100 is on, the T20 Blast, which is their original T20 tournament, their version of the IPL, which doesn't have the world star power as an IPL or even a CPL, but that's where T20 cricket was born. Go back to the archives and listen to the birth of T20 cricket. That's T20 Blast is where the original T20 competition, just started in England. That's going on. It was paused and then the 100 happened. So the quarterfinals have started last night, where Rashid Khan, the great Afghanistan cricketer, has done it again. Like, he starred again. And our thoughts and prayers do go out to everyone listening to us in Afghanistan. It's tough times for you guys. So, our prayers are with you. Just coming back to the Michael Atherton's piece, he's compared the 100 and the T20 Blast to a bookshop selling two editions of the same book. Whereas with one edition, they have it on the window, the advertisement, the pro is happening on the window shelf, and everyone walking past the shop can see that edition of the book. And there's another edition of the book, which is slightly older, T20 Blast, which is hidden somewhere at the back. So you need to really go enter the shop and ask for it, or maybe accidentally find it for it to become relevant. And he says, so obviously people will talk about the book which is being advertised on the window as being the bestseller, because that's what you've done. And there has been a lot of criticism from within England as well about how they've done a Roman Reigns from 2014 to 2019 with the 100, where they've really shoved it into everybody's mouth, saying this is the most exciting thing in English cricket. Watch it. This is the greatest thing ever. And it hasn't gone down well with too many people. In terms of the format, I am with you. For me, the men's format especially just looked like an extension or another version of T20 cricket. I didn't see batters or bowlers do anything too differently. Maybe it will develop and people will get really on board and get funky with the format. But as of now, I think the men's game didn't help that a lot of the key players weren't around. I really enjoyed the women's 100, and I've said this on other shows as well. I think the women got the format going in a better way than the men definitely did. And we saw so many newer names emerge through that tournament. So for me, I think the women's 100 is definitely a success story. The men's, it was a bit of, it had that feel to it. So I agree with you. Neither success story, nor like Michael Atherton said, like, yeah, put both books on the shelf, I mean, on the window, and then let's see. But I think the ECB didn't do that. And yeah, I mean, it's English cricket is going through sometimes, Rajiv. We've seen the team, test team, not do too well. They've done a WWE with their, I think Ali Martin, a good friend of mine, chief cricket writer for The Guardian, has broken a story, yes, 2 days back about how the chief executives, everybody, the highest or the powers that be have given themselves like this massive bonuses, even where 62 people have been let go or been furloughed and a lot of pay cuts have happened for others. So yeah, a bit of WWE happening with the ECB. So English cricket has come to that point where it's facing its moment of truth, really.
I think the biggest success for the women's 100 was seeing players from India participate in a tournament that wasn't India based. And maybe we can have that whole BCCI not letting the men play in other tournaments on and over the ropes sometime. But it was really, really nice to see like some of the big names out there for the 100.
That will be quite an interesting topic because you can draw a lot of parallels between what WWE do with their wrestlers and the BCCI and the Indian players. But we'll leave that for another show.
The rumors of Bray Wyatt coming to AEW are true. Brother, do you think that's fact or do you think it's fiction?
I'm calling it fiction, not just because the report came through from the fiction writer himself, Dave Meltzer. No offense to Dave Meltzer. He does his job. He sells his product and there are buyers out there. So, you can't blame him for that. And I'm not basing it on that. I'm just basing it on what kind of role Bray Wyatt or what is he called now? William Rotunda? Is that his real name? I think so.
I think so.
Yeah, whatever his real name. Mr. Rotunda, like whenever he does come into AEW, I don't know whether his character or whatever character he comes up with fits into the AEW model right now. I mean, the farthest I can see them being a little hokey or a little spooky with their characters, Sting and Darby Allin hanging on to the rafters, not saying much very often. They do. It's not like this is not the Sting of 1997, but they do speak. But that's the spookiest. Maybe Malakai Black playing a sort of dark character. But apart from that, they are such a wrestling-oriented company. And, now we have brought CM Punk in, and it looks, I was reading a report that Daniel Bryan is well on his way to AEW. That's a topic for another day again. I don't know where Bray Wyatt or William Rotunda fits in, unless he completely changes his character and comes up with a... And he's completely capable of that. He is one of the most creative people in the wrestling industry today, as we well know, and we've heard about it from so many people. And he's capable of completely reinventing himself. But just seeing what he's been doing on social media and, he's still teasing a fiendish character of sorts. And he's being cryptic, not cryptic in a Raven sense, but cryptic in the real sense. Eric Bischoff gets really annoyed with Raven and his cryptic cynicism, one way of putting it. So this is more like he's still kind of tugging at that fiendish character. I don't see it fit into AEW. I hope it doesn't fit in. He's such a great performer that he could definitely make AEW his own and take over AEW if he comes up with something different. But for now, maybe he's going somewhere else. Impact, maybe Impact does have a scope for New Japan. I'm not sure too much about the New Japan product. But yeah, I do see him doing stuff like that for now. But having said that, the AEW do seem to have an open door policy with anyone leaving, a big name leaving WWE. We haven't seen Braun Strowman come on board or being spoken about too much either. So maybe the Wyatt family at this point has no scope. Eric Rowan, another one, right? He hasn't really come calling to AEW either. So yeah, maybe that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's fiction. And those two places you mentioned, Impact Wrestling or New Japan Pro Wrestling, those are the ones that I think are best suited for him. If he's going to keep the character that's similar to The Fiend, then I think Impact Wrestling would be the best bet. I mean, they've given their talents a lot of freedom when it comes to the cinematic presentation. All Ego Ethan Page had a match against himself before he left Impact Wrestling. So they would probably welcome a Fiend-like cinematic character. And New Japan Pro Wrestling has always been a big fan of over-the-top creepy characters. So I think he would get a very positive reaction there because of the character work. I know that they could sell merchandise because a lot of the Japanese fans over there love things like The Fiend and that type of mask and whatnot. And like you said, I don't see where he fits into AEW right now. I mean, who knows? Maybe AEW has big plans of some changes that no one is aware of yet. They are good at keeping secrets if they want to, but if you ask me, he's either going to land at Impact Wrestling or New Japan Pro Wrestling, and those are really his only two options.
Unless he comes back to the WWE. Don't rule that out either.
Ratings won't change just because John Cena is gone. Is that fact or fiction? And I say it's a fact. Anybody watching WWE is watching WWE. John Cena is a big name. And yes, he brought my attention to one Raw and a couple of SmackDowns, but that was it. His appearance didn't really drastically change the ratings of either shows. Right now, the WWE has a base of about 1.7 to 2 million viewers, somewhere in that range, and it never really fluctuates. So I don't see them losing a huge number of viewers just because John Cena is gone. And we know he's going to be back at some point. He said as much himself many times. So if you're already watching, just keep your eyes on the product until he comes back. And if he's the only reason that you're watching, then keep an eye out on social media.
Yeah, I agree with you. When I saw that mentioned in the format first, Rajiv, I thought I'll go with fiction for that. Then I sat and thought about it, and I have to agree with you. I think it is, it's not going to change much. John Cena was clearly brought for SummerSlam, and I thought that was the case with Goldberg as well, but I think with Goldberg, they might push towards somehow whenever Saudi Arabia comes into the picture, Goldberg emerges, right? So maybe that has something to do with it, but John Cena, it was very clear, like from the start, they're going to really unload him on the wrestling, the WWE universe, as they call it, on Raw and SmackDown. He was bouncing around, and there were some shows where reportedly he was at the back, but he wasn't brought to the stage. Not for the TV audience. He did make appearances after the cameras went off. I think he had a couple of dark matches as well, one for sure. And you're right. Like, yeah, John Cena generates excitement. And it fit in with the fact that the crowds were back. But in terms of TV audiences, you're right. They've been very loyal. The number hasn't fluctuated. It's something Eric Bischoff complains about a lot, justifiably so. Wrestling is not bringing too much of a new audience to the scene. Even with CM Punk coming, I think it might make AEW more relevant. But does that mean that you're bringing the casual fan in to watch wrestling? I don't know. Like, you know, for the casual fan, I can say from experience, if I don't know about CM Punk, I don't think CM Punk is the kind of guy who's going to bring this is my opinion, a casual viewer in, because there's nothing extravagant about him. There's nothing eye-catching about CM Punk, the personality or the wrestler. If I already know wrestling and I really know the backstory, then yes, for me, it's a big deal that CM Punk is here. But am I going to go and watch CM Punk just because he's CM Punk? I don't know, if I don't know anything about wrestling. Would I do that if I'm if it's John Cena? Maybe, but then I lose interest once I see what happens with John Cena. So I think that is not going to change with wrestling anytime soon, where a lot of non-wrestling fans that you and I know in our lives are suddenly going to jump on the wrestling bandwagon. And it's an unfortunate fact, and it is what it is. But yeah, John Cena said that he's not going to return anytime soon. Maybe, you know, maybe we can wait till next year's SummerSlam for him to return. Because as soon as Raw went off air yesterday, I couldn't switch the TV off in time. I did watch him host Wipeout on our television for 5 minutes. And it wiped out my interest from that show. Unfortunately, I'm not watching that show. I've never watched it before, and I'm never watching it again.
Oh, brother, those are all good points. In the end, you popped me, so thank you for that. And thank you all so much for tuning in to Chop On. We appreciate all the love and support that we have been receiving. Make sure you keep listening to us to see which one of us finally turns heel. We're both kind of teasing it, so we will wait and see. Bharat sir, do you have any last words for our listeners before we head out of here today?
No, I mean, it's fun to finish on a happy thought about anticipation. You know, we're using all the things that work in good storytelling when it comes to wrestling and cricket. We're not giving much away. Could be either of us. It could be any time. It could be anywhere. But to find out, you need to tune into the same Chop On channel at the same Chop On times. And I'll let you finish off, Rajiv. I know you love to have the final word, and I know what you're going to say, but you say it best.
Well, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Chop On Pod. On Twitter, he is at BeastieBoy07. I am at TheRajiv8. I might be turning heel soon. He might be turning heel soon. But until then, keep chopping on, people.